We'll take a look at a document that put ham radio frequency coordination on its ear in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this RAIN report. If you were involved in frequency coordination back in 1988, the mere mention of the Kowalski letter would have given you pause about the future of repeater coordination. The Kowalski letter, released in December 1987, put frequency coordinators on notice that the FCC had relaxed its rules governing frequency coordination in the U.S. amateur radio service. Following the publication of that letter, there was a rise in ham radio litigation, according to that document's author, Ray Kowalski, chief of the Special Services Division in the FCC's private radio bureau during much of the 80s. In January 1988, Kowalski returned to the private sector as an attorney with a Washington, D.C. law firm. This is the second excerpt from a talk this former bureaucrat delivered before the Frequency Coordinator Forum at the 1988 Dayton Hamvention.
I suppose when many of you heard that I was going to be here today, you thought that I was going to defend my infamous letter of last December.
Well.
You know, it's funny, in years past when I've addressed this group, they've said, well, are you wearing your bulletproof vest? This year, when somebody found out I was coming to address this group, they said, are you wearing your lead underwear? Now, why are you aiming lower? That letter, and I will not refer to it by the author's last name, as so many of you have wanted to do, that letter is an absolutely asinine outcome. It's a totally ridiculous position to put people in to say there could be two repeater coordinators in any geographic area. That's absurd. I'd reach the same result again today, however, under the same circumstances.
How do we fix it?
I'm not sure how you fix it. I have some suggestions for how you fix it. But, you know, there is a poison pill in that letter that everyone seems to be ignoring. We said that if you dual coordinators don't want to expose your users to the potential for some enforcement stemming from their coordinated versus non-coordinated status, you guys will get together and share your information so you don't have inconsistent coordinations. That, of course, makes two repeater coordinators one, is what it does. And we said that in that letter, and it's in there. Unfortunately, everyone seems to be ignoring that. And one reason may be that the general body of repeater users, whom that language was designed to protect, doesn't know about it and could care less. Someone was telling me yesterday, as long as that repeater kerchunks when they hit the key, that's all they care about. Well, maybe you've got to get a little better grassroots support and understanding among the people who use these things for them to realize that it's not just the repeater coordinators that have to carry all the weight here. There are some real exposure for the repeater users that has to be addressed. So I won't defend that that position, but I will tell you that I'd come out exactly the same way again today. There's no other alternative to doing so. Let's talk about the commission for a while. One of my new favorite subjects. The commission's not going to conduct a fact-finding hearing to determine who's a legitimate coordinator. That's exactly what would have been called for in the situation last December. In order to reach a determination as to who was the rightful coordinator, the commission would have had to go into what amounts to an evidentiary hearing to do that. They don't have, A, the resources, or B, the inclination to do that. The last time I was over there, I checked. Johnny's got three people on his staff. Am I right, John?
As of Wednesday,
that's right. He may have less. He may have less now. And I can tell you from when I left, I know what the enforcement list looked like. It was 2.5 pages long of things they were trying to attend to on the enforcement area. And then you have the other people writing regulations. The other people. You've got three people. That's all you've got. One person does enforcement, one person does rulemaking, and the other tries to split his time between the two of them, helping him out and lending expertise. That's it. You're not going to get evidentiary hearings and fact-finding determinations out of something like that. It's just not in the cards. So perhaps that suggests something else that you might want to do, is see about putting some pressure on the commission to beef up that staff. Now, that's as likely to happen as a re-regulation, I suppose, but it's a thought. I'd like to suggest some possible things you could do. You know, the commission just opened up PR docket 88-139. Now, that is a complete rewrite of the amateur rules. And you could use that as a vehicle to achieve some kind of sensible regulation for repeaters. You know, it happens all the time. Some court hands down a crazy decision someplace, and the legislature swings into action and undoes it. It's very simple. It takes is some words on paper. You can undo what the staff did in that letter by trying to use that docket to get regulations that are tailored to repeater coordination and regulations that preclude the two-coordinator option. Write a rule. There shall be only one repeater coordinator in any given geographic area determined by the hams in that area. There's a rule. How about that? You know, too broad. Oh, there's all kinds of problems. I just thought it up. Of course there's problems with it. It's too broad. It's too everything. But it can be done. That's the point. How about this one? Now, someone catch Johnston. He's about to faint. How about repeater licensing?
Yeah.
Yeah,
wait a second.
I know.
We've been that route.
I know you've been that route, but why did you stop?
It was better than the
You know.
The license ran out.
There you go. There's all kinds of reasons why you did it and why you stopped and things like that, but the only thing that gives coordination any legitimacy is that a license comes out of it. You see your problem? Every one of you here is a licensed repeater operator. Every one of you. And the problem is that there's nothing that somehow parcels out the scarce spectrum. Now, in land mobile, when they're gone, they're gone. In amateur radio, when they're gone, you're supposed to pull one out of your hat. It ain't there. How do you limit it? You license them. You may have to go back to that. It's one alternative that I just throw out as a possible way out of this. I would think that you would immediately want to adopt the approach taken by the Northeastern group in certifying each other and establishing some legitimacy for everyone who's currently involved. Commission doesn't have a record of who's doing repeater coordination. You do. So if you can establish yourselves with each other, the commission will accept that. It doesn't take a whole lot for that to happen, as long as there's some legitimacy to what's going on. The point is, you've got to get that support somewhere.
You're listening to a 1988 Dayton Hamvention talk by Ray Kowalski, chief of the Special Services Division in the FCC's Private Radio Bureau for much of the 80s. His December 1987 letter sent shockwaves throughout the U.S. amateur radio service, especially the frequency coordinators of the day, who were suddenly faced with the grim reality that the commission no longer would limit ham radio repeater coordination to one coordinator per a given geographical area, as had been FCC policy prior to 1988. We'll conclude this talk given by that letter's author, Ray Kowalski, in a moment. This is the Rain Report, which usually updates Saturday morning on therainreport.com, on Twitter at therainreport, and via iTunes. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
With that, I would say that you really want to control the squabbling, shall we call it. You know, I think at every Dayton I've been to, there have always been undercurrents of what's going on where, and there's this hotspot or that hotspot. In perspective, I guess it's better than lawsuits. Squabbling means that the people haven't proceeded to that point. They're upset with each other, and you know, they're doing whatever it takes, but they're not suing each other. And to that extent, everyone is to be applauded. I think that the squabbling has to be held to a very low profile so that you don't get too much attention from the commission and get them to apply their energies to the squabbles rather than to the underlying problems. You know, it's always easy to treat the symptoms and not the disease. And I think you may be on the wrong track if you let that squabbling get out of hand. The only kind of repeater complaint that the commission really understands is when the users say there's not enough spectrum to complete a communication. But if you stop and think about it, that is not the complaint that we're hearing on repeater coordination. We're hearing that people can't establish their repeaters without interference. Who cares? The repeaters are there to serve everybody. Every year when he comes back from Dayton, Johnston always told me that he could drive from Ohio to Maryland and at times not be able to bring anybody up on a repeater. There's plenty of spectrum out there. You know, the commission's not used to hearing the owners of the repeaters say, I can't establish a repeater. The only thing they want to respond to is, can people who use them get through and transmit a message? And that's not what your complaint is. And to the extent that it's not, your whole position is very, very weak. The commission is not going to pay you a lot of heed simply because people can't establish a repeater with their call sign on it for whatever reason, when the area is already completely saturated with repeaters that aren't being used 99% of the time. Okay? Keep that in mind. You know, it's really a shame. Amateur radio was the model that other services have followed. Amateur radio has been the model for the technology. Amateur radio has shown how to use technology and make it work. Amateur radio created the concept of repeater coordination and provided the models for others to use it, and now it's turning into a mess. And unfortunately, that mess gives your enemies, your opponents in spectrum matters, a great deal of ammunition. Don't do that. You've got problems enough with people who want your spectrum for them to tell the commission they can solve two birds with one stone by taking some spectrum away. And I don't want to hear that there'll be uprisings and guerrilla spectrum war and everything else. You know, nonsense. Avoid that if at all possible. You want to avoid that. Probably the first time I came to Dayton, I told the commission, if you had a problem and you didn't work it out, and you let the FCC work it out, you wouldn't like the results that the FCC comes up with. Well, that prophecy came true. I made another prophecy. I said, if you don't want the commission to take some kind of action to cure a problem, don't be a problem for the commission, or you won't like that result either. Do you really want to go for two? I really hope you don't.
And that concludes A Dose of Reality from the 1988 Frequency Coordinator Forum at the Dayton Hamvention. This was the second excerpt from a talk given at that forum by Ray Kowalski, Chief of the Special Services Division in the FCC's Private Radio Bureau, during much of the 80s, and the man behind the so-called Kowalski letter that set the ham radio frequency coordination community on their collective ear. Editorial note, quote, if we in the amateur radio service can't find ways to settle our disputes in an equitable manner, we just may give the FCC and those who wish to abscond with our VHF and UHF frequencies the ammunition they've been waiting for. Unquote. Now, while that editorial comment was written almost 30 years ago, it still applies today. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2017 Rain. All rights are reserved. You can hear parts 1 and 2 of this FCC talk on therainreport.com, at The Rain Report on Twitter, and via iTunes. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 on behalf of all those planning to make the sojourn to Xenia, Ohio, for the Dayton Hamvention in mid-May. Keep on hamming!